From the newsroom of the Oklahoman, I'm Ben Felder. This is Oklahoman Unfolded. One 100 days ago, Kevin Stitt became governor of Oklahoma. In his first few months in office, he has tackled some of his biggest campaign pledges, while others remain a work in progress. While Stitt has his supporters and critics, he has already made some fairly significant changes to the way state government operates in Oklahoma. Today is Tuesday, April 23rd. Carmen Foreman covers the state capitol for the Oklahoman. And Carmen, today marks 100 days in office for Stitt. And it's kind of a political marker that's often recognized. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not too much time. If this was an NFL football season of 16 games, we'd only have one game played. So still a lot of work to go. But what have we already seen from Governor Stitt in his first few months in office?
Well, I'm not much of an NFL fan, but 100 days, like you said, 100 days for a governor or a president or whoever is elected to a particular office, you know, it's more of a symbolic thing. But Governor Stitt has actually made some pretty good progress on some of his initiatives that he talked about on the campaign trail. And the first one I would point you to is that his agency reconsolidation and boosting gubernatorial authority over some of Oklahoma's state agencies. He was able to accomplish that heck within the first couple of months on the job. Him and leaders in the House and the Senate were able to come together, come to a compromise, and now he has the authority to hire and fire agency directors at five state agencies that he didn't have the power to do that before at.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things I remember from the campaign trail. It's kind of a wonky policy issue about, you know, kind of checks and balances and who has the power in the governor and the legislature, because for a lot of voters, they just kind of see it as, you know, these are your elected officials, they need to figure it out. But he really did a good job of kind of selling to Oklahomans that as a governor, he doesn't have the power to make significant progress on some issues related to health or education or the Department of Corrections.
Right, and I think he also sold it to voters as, like, because the governor doesn't have power over these issues of health or education or whatever, those voters also didn't have power or accountability over these state agencies.
Yeah. And maybe this was something that he needed to tackle in those first 100 days, because coming off an election victory, he had a mandate. And since this was one of the things he talked the most about on the campaign trail, he could come into the legislature and say, this is something we need to get done, which normally would be a pretty difficult task. Not to say that it was easy this year. So state agency reform, you know, one thing that he's gotten done in the first 100 days. What are some other areas where you feel like he's made some, you know, his most progress in his first few months?
I mean, this is a pretty easy one, but he promised not to raise taxes or to boost taxes of any kind. It's only been 100 days, but he hasn't raised taxes, so I've crossed that one off the list because he's kept that promise so far. He still has, you know, 3 years and 200 some odd days ahead of him in his first term, so that could change. He's also made a lot of progress on criminal justice reform. And, you know, he talked about this on the campaign trail, and it was more of an idea without specifics. But when he came into office, he appointed some members to the State Pardon and Parole Board that criminal justice advocates were really, really excited about, these three appointees on the five-member board. So basically, the governor's appointment that just got seated on the board make a majority of the board. And as soon as they were seated, they granted parole to a slew of inmates, and that seemed to be a good sign to satisfy criminal justice advocates who are pushing to reduce Oklahoma's incarceration rate.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to tackle that issue, but I've heard many say that, you know, those pardon and parole appointees are some of the the most significant ways the governor can be involved. Now let's look at education. Education was obviously a big talking point during the campaign. There's kind of two issues of education that he talked about a lot. One was teacher pay. One was making Oklahoma top 10 in education. We'll talk about that second, but let's start with teacher pay. He promised that he would make teachers in Oklahoma the highest paid in the six-state region. A bill giving them that raise has not been sent to his desk yet, but he included it in his budget, and legislative leaders seem like they're on board with this concept. Is that right?
Correct, yes. So the pay raise would be for about $1,200, and right now Oklahoma teachers are second in the region, second only to Texas. And so if the bill passed and made it to the governor's desk, it would put them first in the region. But like you said, you know, Republican leaders in the House and the Senate, they seem on board, but right now it's sort of a, I don't want to say power struggle, but it's more of an in-depth negotiation behind the scenes on how much they want to fund education this year and where specifically all those education dollars are going to, because I know some of the legislative leaders have thought that they want more money going to the classroom and less money going to teacher pay, considering the teachers got, on average, about $6,000 pay increase last year.
Yeah. You know, that teacher pay raise, that making them the highest paid, that may be something to revisit because states are going to adjust their pay. Some states already have. I think Colorado has made some movement to where, you know, if Oklahoma doesn't act, it's going to fall down the list. You know, one thing that Stitt said quite a bit was he wanted to make Oklahoma top 10 in everything, including education. It was kind of a good talking point, but it was kind of vague in terms of what he meant. So I'm not sure how we judge how well he's done in the first 100 days, but a lot of educators would tell you that that is going to require an increase in education funding. You know, his budget didn't include a significant boost in education funding beyond the teacher pay raise, but legislative leaders say that's something they want to do. Have you got any indication from the governor's office of what he thinks about the education budget and whether or not he would be on board with a budget next fiscal year that significantly increases funding for classrooms?
I think he was mentioned in a Tulsa World article where he said, you know, he could be interested in devoting more to education this year. I think in his budget, he put specifically $95 million in new education funding. And so he said he would possibly be willing to go above and beyond that. It just depends on what they want to do with the education funding. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, like the Department of Education requested $450 million in new education funding this year. And the Oklahoma Education Association, they wanted $150 million in new education dollars this year. And both of them were kind of saying something along the lines of, well, the Governor Stitt promised to make us top 10 in terms of education, and you don't get there without investing a significant chunk of money into education funding.
Yeah. And so 100 days in office today, it's my understanding that the governor is going to actually kind of celebrate that. Is that what's in the works for Governor Stitt today as he hits day 100?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know the specifics, but I know he's going on a tour of all the media outlets to talk about what he's done in his first 100 days. And he's coming to talk to us later in the day. So I guess we can find out more then of what he's doing to celebrate 100 days.
Yeah, we'll just have to check back tomorrow and see what that tour includes. Carmen, a story in today's Oklahoman, taking a look at some of the promises that Governor Stitt made on the campaign trail and 100 days in, where he is at on some of those pledges. Carmen, thanks for your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This Sunday is the Oklahoma City Memorial Marathon, and thousands of runners will be making their way throughout the city for one of the community's biggest events. One of those runners will be Susan Russell Stewart, who at age 70 is doing a half marathon for the first time. Jenny Carlson, a columnist for The Oklahoman, wrote that Susan is just one of many stories of personal triumph that will be on display this Sunday. And Jenny, who joins me on the line, that's kind of one of my favorite parts of this week, is reading some of your stories about those who are going to be tackling the marathon. And today you wrote about Susan. Tell us a little bit, who is Susan?
Yeah, you know, she's a great story. You know, she's a community champion even before this Sunday. You know, she's done a lot of work in her life. She was a teacher, taught in the schools, in Oklahoma City Public Schools during a time of desegregation. Then she went into HR ultimately, and then that sort of post-Oklahoma City bombing led her into working in the schools again for Project Heartland, which provided mental health services for lots of people after the bombing. And then she got into work that basically is trying to help stop the cycle of violence in families, domestic violence, child abuse, all that sort of thing. So she has done a ton for our community. But then last year, when she started to approach her 70th birthday, she decided she wanted to do 7 5Ks. She had done some 5Ks over the years, been a walker throughout her life. And that then spawned a conversation between Susan and one of her nieces, and the topic was brought up about doing a half marathon. And lo and behold, at 70, Susan is going to do the half marathon in Oklahoma City. She's going to do her first half marathon on Sunday. It's just a fun story about somebody not really seeing age as a barrier to anything. She wants to go out and live, and she's gonna.
Yeah, I mean, you write a little bit about kind of how she prepared for this, and I want to ask you about that in a moment. But you reference kind of her career, not just working in corporate circles, but volunteering or working for some social organizations. I think the thing that strikes me a lot is I hear that story a lot. I'm sure you have too. That for a lot of Oklahoma City residents who were here during the bombing, that it really just kind of changed their worldview afterwards. And for many, they sought out ways to just kind of help their community in a variety of ways.
Yeah, for sure. And this race, I think a lot of people, obviously, go to the memorial, they go to the museum, they may even, go downtown on the bombing anniversary for the ceremony or watch that on television each year. But the race, the Memorial Marathon, has really become sort of a community rallying point, I think, in a lot of ways. When it started, it was pretty small, and the idea of a marathon in Oklahoma City at the time, basically 5 years after the bombing, was it was kind of a this will be quaint sort of thing. Well, now, like you referenced, Ben, this has become a huge event in the community. 20,000-ish runners every year, doing all sorts of different races within the day: marathon, half marathon, marathon relay, kids marathon, 5K. So you've got just tons of people getting involved. And for years, actually, Susan Russell Stewart was involved just going out and supporting this event and going and cheering on friends and family. And now she finds herself on the other side of that, getting ready to actually be part of the event and get cheered on by people. So I do think that it's one of those things that, people have experienced these years after the bombing differently, and have different connections and links to that event. But I think the race is one of those things that a lot of people have found as a chance to support the memorial, support the community in a way that is different and really brings so many people together around the community.
Yeah. I live along the route, and every year my wife, son, and I, we go out and cheer on the runners. And it's always something that looks really daunting to do a marathon or a half marathon. And then you see someone, you're like, well, maybe, if they can do it. And that's kind of, when you hear about a 70-year-old doing it, it makes you think, well, maybe I can be doing it, although it's still not that easy. So how did she approach this to just kind of train for a half marathon? And, what were the steps that she took to get ready for the race?
Yeah, so there are several groups around Oklahoma City that, as the race has gotten bigger, they have sort of addressed the need for training by, doing different things to get people ready for both the marathon and the half marathon. Several groups, one of them being the Red Coyote Running Store, which has in the last, I don't know how many years it's existed. In my mind, it's maybe somewhere around 5 or 8, somewhere around there, have had training groups, and people can sign up and they meet once a week in a formal way. And then I think some of these groups do some more informal training, but they set out a training calendar for everybody to follow as best they can. And then those times that they meet during the week, those tend to be longer training stints. In Susan's case, the group she got into is a walking group. So while they are doing some longer distances, several weeks ago, they did an 11-mile training route. So, you know, that's nothing to sneeze at, even if you're walking. And so these different groups are doing different distances, different pace times, that sort of thing. So it was a process that they, you know, in Susan's case, with her busy work life, she would go out early mornings on those non-group days and get in her training distances. But then on those training days, they were able to be together as a group to talk about different issues they might be facing, whether physical, mental, you know, what's this going to be like? How do I need to prepare? Susan said she learned something pretty much every week that they did one of those training groups. You know, one week it was, you know, I'm wearing too many clothes. I'm overheating even in the cold, or, you know, this is how I need to start to hydrate and get the nutrition I need throughout these distances. So all sorts of different things that you don't know you're going to need to know until you start to expand your comfort zone. And she learned those things, as anybody who does the distances do. But she really felt like doing 11 miles a few weeks ago was a really important distance for her. She's never done 13.1 miles, and most half marathoners don't until they get to that race day for the first time. Same with marathoners. They get very close to that 26.2 in the marathon training, but usually don't quite get there. And so those last couple of miles, they say the adrenaline kicks in and carries you home. And it seems crazy to think that 2 miles would just be adrenaline. But I think it does kind of, in Oklahoma City especially, you start to really feel like you're heading back downtown. Mm-hmm. And it's a great scene downtown. Everybody wants to get there. And I think it does sort of start to carry you in a way that you can't really express until you're in the middle of it.
Yeah. Well, such an inspiring event for so many reasons. I always look forward to this event every year, and I always enjoy, look forward to this week, learning about some of the stories of those who are participating, and appreciate the story and you taking some time to talk about it.
Definitely so. I think everybody that does these sorts of things has a story. It's just a matter of finding the ones we put in the paper. They'll never run out, because we're just going to keep having great individual backstories that come and do the event. So they never dry up, but it's always fun to get to this week and tell these stories.
Yeah. Jenny Carlson, a sports columnist for The Oklahoman. Thanks for your time. Have a good one.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
Also making news in The Oklahoman. Oklahoma City Manager Craig Freeman named 2 new assistant city managers Monday, promoting candidates from within to join the next generation of administrative leadership at City Hall. Also, the medical helicopter company Air Methods Corporation has closed 4 medical helicopter bases in Oklahoma due to financial pressures. Following an analysis of operations, officials with the Colorado-based company made the decision to close the 4 bases, affecting about 12 to 15 employees per base. That does it for today's episode. I'm Ben Felder. See you tomorrow.